Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, I'm Steph, and this is Not Today. Hello, and welcome. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that bonus episode number 53 will be coming out next week over on our Patreon. Our patrons get to vote on all the stories they want to hear over there, and while it's too late to vote on this bonus episode, you can join in and vote on all of the bonus episodes that are to come. So go over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast and check it out. But today, I'm going to be talking about an Uber driver that went on an extremely unexpected rampage around the city of Kalamazoo, Michigan. Ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft are so amazing and convenient, but it is really scary not knowing who you're getting in the car with. There are safety measures in place, but even with that, anything can happen. And even less safety measures were in place at the time of this story, so it was even easier for this driver to get away with what he was doing. But why don't we just jump right in, because I have a lot to talk about. February 20th, 2016, in Kalamazoo, Michigan, started off like any other normal day. Kalamazoo is about halfway between Chicago and Detroit. It's a vibrant hub in the southwestern part of the state. It blends a rich industrial history with lively arts, brewery, and college town culture. It's a safe Midwestern town with a good cost of living. It's not the kind of place that you'd expect someone to go on a rampage. And that day, a man named Matt Mellon needed to take an Uber to his friend's house to pick up his car, since he had left it there the night before. So at 4:21 p.m., Matt called an Uber and got the notification that his driver was on the way. His driver's name was Jason, and he was driving a silver Chevy Equinox, so Matt kept an eye out. When the car pulled up, he noticed the driver had a German Shepherd in the back seat, so he opted to sit in the front. Jason had taken his dog Mia on a walk before he had begun driving for Uber that day, and I guess he just decided to take her with him. Matt thought it was a little bit weird, but he didn't mind enough to cancel the ride, so he just got in the front. And at the beginning of the ride, everything seemed completely normal. But then Jason received a phone call, and he took it over the car's Bluetooth speaker. It was his son calling to see if his father was coming home for dinner because the food was ready. Very standard, chill phone call. It was also brief, maybe 2 to 3 minutes at most, and then Jason hung up. But from that point on, something shifted, and it was as if Jason was a completely different person. Out of nowhere, he slammed on the gas pedal and they took off, speeding wildly down a residential road. They were going approximately 80 miles per hour down a side road. He was running through stop signs, speeding through traffic, he sideswiped a car, and even drove through a small section of woods. And Matt was sitting in the front seat thinking they might be T-boned and he could die. He wanted out of that car. He was worried he wasn't going to make it home to see his family and friends again. So he began pleading with Jason to slow down and stop the car. Jason's responses back were oddly calm. He said things like, "What's wrong with the way I'm driving? I didn't hit that car," as he was going 75 miles per hour and swerving in and out of traffic. At one point, Matt even considered hitting him. But since he didn't know what else to do, he just kept saying, "Oh, there's my friend's street," which wasn't true, but he just wanted Jason to stop the car and let him out. Matt began pointing out random houses, saying that was his friend's house, and stopped the car, and finally, Jason slammed on his brakes. A woman named Casey Black heard a loud screeching sound, and typically her neighborhood was really quiet, so she ran out into the front yard to see what was going on. The silver Chevy Equinox came screeching to a halt, and the passenger door flew open as Matt tumbled out of the car. Casey Black couldn't tell if this man had been pushed out or if he had jumped out of the car himself, but she knew something strange was going on. She saw the driver was a man with dark, thick-framed glasses, gray hair that was all over the place, and he looked very agitated. And he immediately took off driving again, his tires screeching from the wheels trying to catch up to the gas pedal hitting the floor before he sped off. At that point, Matt was already dialing 911 to report this driver. When he got through to the dispatcher, she asked if he wanted to talk to an officer or if he just wanted them to be on the lookout for this car. And he told them to just be on the lookout. It seemed like there wasn't much the police were going to do for him. Detective Corey Ghirinelli from the Kalamazoo Police Department said when people call in erratic drivers, there really isn't much they can do. Unless the police witness the vehicle driving erratically themselves, they can only take it as a tip and keep a lookout. So Jason had basically gotten away with driving that erratically because no police officer had seen him driving that way with his own two eyes. So if he returned to driving like a normal person at that point, he would have gotten away with it completely.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Which Matt obviously didn't like because he felt very in fear for his life. So when he got home, he went into his Uber app and filed a complaint through them. Which basically meant he wrote an email, because back in 2016, there was no way for a user to contact a human in the event of an emergency. There was only an email that you could write your complaints to. He was so frustrated by this whole situation and that he wasn't getting through to anyone that he went to his girlfriend and asked her what she thought they should do. And together, they decided to post about Matt's Uber driver on Facebook. They posted Jason's profile picture and put out a warning to anyone in the Kalamazoo area that this man was not a safe ride. They listed his car and wrote about what happened, but that's all they could really do. They only had his profile picture, his car, and his first name. So who was Jason? Jason Dalton was raised in Greenfield, Indiana before his family moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan, where he attended Comstock High School, graduating in 1989. In high school, he was the co-captain of the football team. He had pretty good grades, and his friends said he was a really friendly guy. His former friend, Andrew Jameson, said Jason was the best man at his wedding, and he could talk to anyone. He was the kind of guy that would speak his mind, but not in a way that was going to cause trouble. After high school, Jason went on to attend Kalamazoo Valley Community College and graduated in December of 1992 with an associate's degree in law enforcement. He did pass his law enforcement exams, although he decided not to enroll in the school's police academy program. According to an old friend, Jason had tried to become an officer in the surrounding towns, but for whatever reason, he never did, and he had no interest in moving far away to find a police job. So instead, he studied auto body work at Wyo Tech in Laramie, Wyoming, and found work at a BMW office in New Jersey. This allowed him to get jobs as a mechanic and then an insurance adjuster, but eventually he found his way back to Kalamazoo. Jason married his wife Carol in 1995, and the couple had two children together. In 2016, Jason Dalton was 45 years old, and he and his wife had two kids, aged 10 and 15. And around this time, he was generally described as a nice guy and a good family man. He had a normal 9-to-5 job, he was an insurance adjuster at this point, he was a husband and a father of two who posted pictures of his kids on Facebook, playing in the snow or going on family vacations together. He spent his time working on cars because he liked to figure out how they worked, and he also really liked guns. There was one occasion where someone broke into his garage at night, and the person stole a handful of his prized tools. And after Jason discovered he had been robbed, he started collecting guns. That event is what drove him to have a massive gun collection. So by 2016, which was a year after the break-in, he had 15 guns, which were all legal. There was nothing to prevent him from owning any of these guns that he was in possession of. 2 years earlier, in 2014, Uber had just come to the Kalamazoo area. And Jason decided he was going to start driving for Uber as a side hustle to save up some extra money, that way he could take his family on a trip to Disney World. It was a very wholesome reason to be driving for Uber. And he passed the background checks, he had no criminal record, and there was nothing to point to him being a danger. And it was not long after that that he began picking up passengers in his silver Chevy Equinox. And for 2 weeks, his driver rating was great. Although in the days leading up to February 20th, his wife did notice that Jason seemed a little depressed. His behavior wasn't worrisome or strange, so she figured it would just pass. Despite that, February 20th started out like a normal day for Jason. He had hung out with a friend that morning, and they had visited a couple of local gun stores, which was very typical for them. Jason bought a holster and a jacket with a holster sewn into it. He was upbeat during this transaction at the gun store. He was talkative and smiling and laughing with the manager as they walked to the register together. He even turned and smiled on his way out and said he was going to enjoy the weather that day. It was the first sunny day that Kalamazoo had seen in a while. So there was really nothing to point to Jason suddenly exploding and becoming irate and driving extremely erratically. But at 4:34 p.m., after Matt had been able to escape the wild ride in Jason's car, Jason Dalton went home. And while he was at home, he retrieved a Glock 19 9mm handgun, and he put on his son's bulletproof vest. His son had gotten this bulletproof vest with the Kalamazoo County Sheriff's Office, and it was formerly used by Michigan State Police. So it seemed like his son was also interested in becoming a police officer, like Jason had been interested. But now this bulletproof vest was in the hands of Jason Dalton, and he also put on the jacket that he had bought earlier that day with the gun holster sewn into it. He got back into his Chevy Equinox and went out to pick up more passengers. And this time, he was packing heat. That evening, Tiana Carruthers, a 25-year-old mother, was having a great day with her daughter. It was one of the first warm days they had had in a while. It was in the 40s, and it felt like they were having a real break from winter. And on days like that, everyone is outside trying to soak in any bit of sunlight they can. People go on walks, they walk their dogs, kids ride their bikes. Because in Michigan, the winter is pretty bleak. Yes, it's cold, but more than that, the sky is perpetually gray, and you barely see the sun. So the very first day that there's a glimmer of spring, everyone is outside. And this was basically that day. It was the first day that had any sort of sunlight, and everyone was loving it. At 5:32 p.m., a 15-year-old girl named Macy had called an Uber to the Meadows apartment complex. Jason got the call, so he started heading over that way. The Meadows was a typical apartment complex with several parking lots in between the long stretches of buildings where families lived. And as I mentioned, it was a lovely day for Michigan, so a ton of people were outside. And when Jason showed up, he was looking for the girl that called the Uber, but he couldn't find her. So he called Macy and accused her of giving him the wrong address or wrong directions, and he was getting very upset with her before he hung up the phone on her. Macy continued texting Jason asking if he was there, where he was, because she was just trying to find her Uber. And at the same time, Tiana Carruthers, who lived in the Meadows apartment complex where Jason Dalton was supposed to pick up Macy, was at home finishing up a workout. Her daughter was hanging out with some friends, and she came inside to ask her mother if she and her friends could go over to a different friend's house, a girl named Joy. And Tiana said that was fine. She would even walk them over there, that way she could meet her friend's mother. So Tiana, her daughter, and her four friends all happily walked down the sidewalk. The snow was melting, and the girls were laughing as they walked. But the good vibe abruptly ended when Tiana and the girls saw a car speeding toward them. It was instantly right in front of Tiana. When Jason approached Tiana, he rolled down the window and asked if she was Macy. And Tiana told him no, in kind of an aggressive way, because that man was driving erratically and Tiana did not like this interaction. She's also walking with her young daughter and her friends, and this man was driving erratically toward her, so she had every right to be a little bit pissed off. She could also instantly tell that this man was really agitated because he couldn't find this Macy girl. And then after that, he sped off, and Tiana and the girls continued walking, a little bit more hesitantly this time. She still had her eye on this car. And then out of nowhere, Jason whipped the car back around and started driving right back toward her. She said in this moment, it felt like everything was moving in slow motion. And as the car got even with her, she saw him pull out a gun. Tiana immediately jumped in front of the young girls and screamed for them to run, and whatever they did, do not come back. She said she would never forget this man's face or the anger he had in his eyes. After she saw him pull the gun and the girls had run away, she made the decision to start running herself. He started shooting at her repeatedly as she ran. She heard the bullets flying past her as she went. He fired off 15 rounds at Tiana, and she was shot 4 times, but she said she didn't feel the bullets right away. It was almost like a bee sting at first, because her adrenaline was through the roof. Hearing the commotion, a man named John Derecki, who lived in the complex, ran to his door and saw everyone screaming, "Someone just got shot." So he called 911, along with a few other people in the complex that had heard the gunshots and witnessed what was going on. Meanwhile, Tiana, for a split second, thought that this was it for her. She attempted to crawl under a car before she realized if she continued moving, this man was going to keep shooting at her. So she made the decision to lay still on the ground and play dead. She kept telling herself she was going to make it. She had to. She also prayed that the children were okay. She had no idea if any of the bullets had hit them. After the car drove off, Tiana figured it was okay for her to move and to scream again. And the only thing that came out of her mouth was, "Are the kids okay?" And she just kept repeating that as neighbors came out and tried to tend to her. She had taken those bullets for the kids, and she said she would do it all over again to keep them safe. After she was rushed to the hospital, she went into emergency surgery. She underwent multiple surgeries. Her arm had reconstruction surgery, both of her femurs were broken, and a bullet entered her liver, where it still is to this day. But thankfully, Tiana did survive the attack. At this point, the dispatchers did start to put together that this incident was probably connected to the call they had gotten an hour earlier. Both incidents involved a man driving a silver Chevy SUV with a dog in the back and was driving extremely erratically. So a 911 dispatcher called back Matt Mellon for more information about his Uber driver, and he was able to give the dispatcher the driver's name from the Uber app and a description of what he looked like. Thick black glasses, mid-40s white male, salt and pepper hair, facial hair, overweight, and had a black dog in his back seat. He also sent the driver photo because he had taken a screenshot in his Uber profile. At this point, the police probably should have called Uber themselves to get the full name of this driver because they didn't have that at the time, but they didn't. So for now, he was still on the road as Tiana was raced to the hospital in serious condition. And during his getaway, Jason Dalton sideswiped a car and hit another car and ran a red light.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
A man named Jordan Loomis was out with his wife getting ice cream when they saw the silver Chevy SUV come flying down the road out of nowhere. They were stopped at a red light when Jason hit them and then drove off. So Jordan also called the police to come out to the scene. The Chevy Equinox was still operable, but the front was all dented and damaged, making it very easy to identify, so Jason at this point knew he needed to switch cars. And at 5:45 p.m., he called his wife and asked her to meet him at his parents' house. Jason's parents spent a lot of time out of state, so they weren't home at the time, and Jason told his wife he needed to switch cars. When she asked him why, he told her that he was attacked and shot up by rival taxi drivers. According to him, they didn't like Uber drivers. Which is a ridiculous story. He's acting as if they're the Sharks and the Jets and this rival taxi gang shot him up, so now he needs to lay low. And as he's making up this story, he wouldn't look his wife in the eye. He was acting paranoid and went into the house and took out his Glock 19, left it on the workbench, and retrieved a Taurus 9mm handgun with an extended magazine and tucked it into her waistband, telling her she needed to keep that on her. He also told her to stay with the kids and to not leave the house. As if these rival taxi drivers are going to come after his family. He also told her she wouldn't be able to go to work on Monday or take the kids to school, and he was going to withdraw a few $100s from an ATM. He then grabbed another handgun and took it for himself, and finished this interaction by saying, "I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do, but when you watch the 11 o'clock news tonight, you'll know that it was me." It was an extremely eerie and cryptic comment, and his wife had no idea what to make of it. This was totally out of character for him. She didn't know what was going on with her husband. She had never seen anything like this from him. But there was kind of nothing she could do in this moment, because after that, he left. And now he was in a dark-colored Chevy HHR, which was not the car police were on the lookout for, nor did it match the car listed in his Uber profile. And after going home and getting a new gun and switching his cars, he did take a few Uber rides that were completely normal. Each time, he would have to explain to his passengers why his car was different than the one shown on his profile. Some of his riders said the only thing that was odd about this ride was that they were looking for someone in a silver Chevy Equinox, and he pulled up in a dark-colored HHR. He told them he was the guy they were looking for, he just had some car troubles and had to take a new car. One passenger said Jason had been listening to the radio and singing along to it while he drove. He was acting completely normally. And meanwhile, the Smiths were at a local car dealership. The Smith family was made up of mother Lori, dad Rich, son Tyler, and daughter Emily. They were a very close-knit, average family. Rich was the life of the party, and he and his son Tyler were super close. Tyler was 17 years old. He was a soccer player and had a very carefree attitude, as most teenagers do. And at the time, he was dating a girl named Alexis, and they were inseparable. At 9:58 p.m., Rich Smith, Tyler, and his girlfriend Alexis were headed to the Kia dealership to look at a few trucks. Tyler was looking to get a truck that he could take up onto the Sleeping Bear Dunes. Earlier that day, Tyler had gone to the dealership himself to look at trucks, and now he wanted to bring his father back there to show him the trucks that he liked. The family hated dealing with car salesmen, so they always went after hours. Lori, at the time, had been out with friends and her phone battery had died, and Emily was sick at home, so she was in bed. But this was a really exciting evening for Rich and Tyler. When they got to the Kia lot to look at the trucks, Tyler's girlfriend Alexis stayed in the car in the back seat. It was kind of cold outside, she didn't know anything about trucks, and she was a little tired, so she decided to just stay in there and let the father-son duo have their moment. And Rich and Tyler were having an awesome time looking at the trucks. At this point, it was around 10:01 p.m., and this Kia dealership was in a pretty busy intersection, and it was a popular dealership that was in a safe area of Kalamazoo. Jason Dalton had just dropped off a few passengers when he spotted the father and son walking around the Kia dealership looking at the trucks. At that time, they were looking at an electric blue Ford F-150, and for whatever reason, he zeroed in on them and began heading their way. It had been about 4.5 hours since he had shot Tiana Carruthers. He drove into the parking lot, parked his car, and got out. He began walking toward Rich and Tyler and called out to them and asked what they were looking for. But before they could even respond, he shot at them 16 times. He shot one of them 9 times and the other 7. Alexis witnessed this horrifying shooting from inside the family's Range Rover. Tyler and Rich were quickly on the ground, and Alexis ducked behind the seat so Jason couldn't see her. Alexis didn't have her cell phone on her, so she couldn't call for help. All she could do was hide in the back seat and hope Jason hadn't seen her. She watched Jason Dalton walk over to a black car and try to get in, but realized the door was locked, so he just walked away. After Alexis thought the coast was clear, she got out of the car and went over to Tyler to grab his cell phone out of his pocket and called 911. Sergeant Brian Boyer was barely a block away when he got the call, so he drove over only a minute later. 911 also got a call from a witness in the Burger King parking lot next door. They didn't get a good look at the shooter, but they called in the shooting and said they saw smoke coming off of his gun. As Sergeant Brian Boyer pulled in, he was preparing himself for an active shooting situation. He wasn't sure if this suspect was still there or not. When he didn't see anyone around, he moved on to checking Rich and Tyler for any signs of life. But at that point, they were on the ground and not moving. This moment felt like forever, because Sergeant Boyer was all by himself, and there wasn't much he could do. After he identified the two men were deceased, he saw Alexis still on the phone in the back seat of the car. He asked Alexis where the shooter went, and she told him she wasn't sure, but he had run off. When another officer arrived, they had Alexis come out of the car, and she was patted down for weapons herself, because oftentimes the caller is the suspect. She was not the shooter, but she was very calm and in shock. She wasn't panicking. which was interesting, and possibly why the police were slightly skeptical of her, but she was in shock, and people do weird things when that's the case. By that point, 4 or 5 officers had shown up, and one of them had a canine with him, which they were going to use to try to track the shooter since Alexis said he had fled on foot. The dog was able to pick up on the scent relatively quickly, however, it led them behind the Kia dealership, and that was where the scent ended. So they assumed he got into a car and drove off. And that was when officers had to call Lori Smith and tell her that her husband and son had just been shot in cold blood and killed. Kalamazoo is a city with low crime, so these violent attacks seemed pretty out of nowhere. At first, everyone was looking for a silver Chevy Equinox, but now it was a dark Chevy HHR, a completely different car. And police said at first they didn't know that these scenes were connected because they were completely different cars. So people were panicked. They didn't know what was going on in Kalamazoo. Only minutes later, 911 got a call about multiple shots being fired in a Cracker Barrel parking lot. 2 cars had been shot up. When officers pulled onto the scene, they saw 2 men waving them down and pointing at the 2 cars in the parking lot. In these 2 cars was Mary Lou Nye, Mary Jo Nye, Judy Brown, Barbara Hawthorne, and a 14-year-old girl named Abby Kopf, who considered Barbara to be like her grandmother. They had all gone out to a live acrobatic performance at a local theater. Abby called Barbara Grandma Barb. She really enjoyed hanging out with Barbara and her friends. She would take Abby to play cards or to sewing classes, and this night it was to a performance. 68-year-old Barbara Hawthorne was a retired worker for Kellogg's, the cereal company, and 60-year-old Mary Jo Nye was a school teacher, and her sister-in-law, 62-year-old Mary Lou Nye, was a retired worker for the Department of Motor Vehicles in Michigan. 74-year-old Judy Brown was a caregiver for senior citizens. And that evening, the women had met at the Cracker Barrel, had some dinner, and then went in 1 car to the performance. After the show, they returned to the parking lot to split back up and drive home. At the time of the shooting, Mary Lou Nye was in her minivan, and everyone else was in a small red car. Jason Dalton drove up and opened fire on Mary Lou Nye in her minivan. The women in the other car screamed, and that was when he opened fire on their car as well, shooting all of them. At the time police arrived, Barbara was on the phone with dispatch. She was the only one who was still conscious, but everyone else appeared to be fatally wounded. And after a few moments, officers realized that there was actually someone moving in the front seat, and it looked like a kid. An officer opened the door and saw Abby on the floor of the passenger seat with an obvious gunshot wound to the head. Barbara had pushed her down to the floor to keep her safe, but she had still been shot. First responders knew they needed to stop the bleeding as best they could. They put her on the first ambulance and got her out of there right away. At that point, Barbara was still talking with officers, and she even tried to help herself out of the vehicle. She was still conscious and talking when officers handed her over to ambulance staff. Nobody believed Abby was going to survive the gunshot wound to the head, but as long as she was still breathing, they were going to try. At that time, Abby's mother was starting to get really worried because she hadn't heard from Abby in a while, and she had been texting her and Barb about where they were. And that was when she learned from a friend that there was someone out on a shooting spree in Kalamazoo, and her heart sunk. Officers had all of the cell phones from the victims sitting up on top of the car, and they were all ringing at the same time. It's so eerie and sad to picture that. These women were all just trying to have a nice night out together, and now their loved ones wanted to know where they were. Witnesses at the scene reported seeing a dark-colored HHR peeling out of the parking lot, and a surveillance camera caught the car as it drove by. Police still didn't know that this shooter was the same erratic Uber driver from earlier that day in the Chevy Equinox. And after this major shooting, Jason Dalton continued to go on about his night, picking up more passengers through the Uber app and dropping them at their destinations as if nothing had happened. Meanwhile, Abby's parents were called by hospital staff who informed them that she had been shot in the head, and they were told to get to the hospital soon because Abby wasn't going to make it through the night. There were 3 dead and 2 being treated for serious injuries. And yet, it was a Saturday night in Kalamazoo. People were out at dinner and bars and planning to Uber home. But as word of these shootings started to spread, the fear and panic going through the community was palpable. 2 women had been warned by their parents about this Chevy HHR, and when they called an Uber, they got Jason. His car at the time was still listed as a Chevy Equinox, and when it pulled up, they saw that it was a different car. And this woman got a really bad feeling and didn't get in, but other people did. Not only did people take rides with Jason that night, but a few of his passengers point blank asked him if he was the shooter. In a joking manner, one of his passengers asked, "You're not the shooter, are you?" And Jason said, "No." He said, "Are you sure?" And Jason said, "No, I'm just really tired." It's so strange that Jason was flip-flopping back and forth between a murderous rampage and being a normal Uber driver. None of it made sense. And police had still yet to put together that the HHR and the Equinox crimes were the same guy. But at this point, they were all on the lookout for the HHR. When Abby's parents made it to the hospital, it was completely locked down. It was already such a random series of events, they didn't know where the shooter was or what he was going to do next, so the hospital went on lockdown. They weren't letting people in, which made it difficult for Barbara's nephew and for Abby's parents. Barbara's nephew did eventually get into the hospital, however, Barbara sadly passed away in the hospital, and it was reported on the news that Abby had passed away as well. Abby's parents were escorted up to the ICU to her room, and a few hours later, she flatlined. They tried to do CPR, but they were unable to revive her in that moment. Abby's parents told them to let her go, and if it was meant to be, it was meant to be. And her parents began saying their goodbyes as her mother held her hand. She said, "Abby, if you can hear me, this is Mama. If you can hear me at all, give me a sign." And then she squeezed her mother's hand. Abby's mother told nurses about this, but they told her it was most likely just a reflex. Abby at that point had been unhooked from all the machines. They put a blanket all the way up to her neck, and they started taking the machines out of the room. So they fully expected her to die within minutes. So Abby's parents said their goodbyes. Her mother told her that she loved her and put her head on Abby's chest, which was when she heard something. So she told the nurse she thought she heard a heartbeat. The nurse came over and checked Abby, fully expecting there to be nothing. But when she heard something as well, she straight up said, "Holy shit," before she began flipping on a bunch of machines they had already turned off, and nurses and doctors began running back into the room. Abby again squeezed her mother's hand, and she knew Abby was back and was going to fight like hell. Even after Abby's vitals stabilized, she still had to go through several surgeries, one of which involved removing a section of the frontal lobe of her brain and also placing a metal plate in her head where the bullet had shattered her skull. After all of these surgeries, she was in a coma for days, and her mother stayed by her side the entire time. And miraculously, Abby ended up surviving, but it would be a very long battle ahead of her. Jason Dalton didn't know that the police were closing in on him, but around midnight, things were definitely picking up in this investigation. At 12:36 a.m., an officer called in that he was following a black HHR that had just left one of the bars downtown. This would be the 8th or 9th black HHR they had stopped that night. So they pulled him over with multiple police cars. And when he came to a stop, he just sat in the vehicle. The officers approached as a unit, in case he decided to flee on foot. They also had no idea if he would pull a gun on them, so police were preparing for the worst. They yelled, "Driver, stick your hands out of the window." And Jason stuck his hands out. Two officers approached the car with their guns drawn. They got him out of the car and began patting him down. They asked him if he had anything on him, and he said yes, he had a gun in his pocket, and they also found a bullet in one of his pockets as well. It was the same gun that had killed the women at the Cracker Barrel and Rich and Tyler Smith, so they cuffed him, and surprisingly went with them peacefully. They also discovered he was wearing a bulletproof vest, and were shocked that he went with them so easily after everything he had done. Once again, none of this made sense. After they took Jason into custody, they searched his home, where they found his very large gun collection and his other murder weapon in the basement. They also found countless empty shell casings he used to make his own ammunition. They found a bow and arrow, airsoft guns, two loaded magazines sitting near a television remote, stray bullets and spent cartridges all around his house, body armor, musket balls, and a box for firearm accessories with a children's third grade learning program in it. In the backyard, the police noticed multiple bullet holes in the fence near children's playground equipment. And apparently, neighbors had complained about Jason shooting guns in his yard for hours at a time, which is not something you can do in a residential area. Meanwhile, Jason Dalton sat down with two detectives, Detective Kyle Gorham and Detective Bill Morian. They were very shocked to see that Jason seemed to be very soft-spoken and a docile guy. They described him as passive.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's The Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Despiértate, que el $4 breakfast meal deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un sausage McMuffin o sausage biscuit, hash brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The officers told him he seemed like a pleasant person, because the key in getting people to talk is getting them to feel comfortable. And he said, well, thank you, and I appreciate you being nice to me too. He was not aggressive at all, but he did choose to not answer some of their questions. Detective Dalton asked him if he knew how many people he had killed tonight, and he said, I would just like to plead the fifth. He told them he really didn't want to talk about anything, but after some time, he started getting more comfortable and opening up. Detectives began by asking him about his ride with Matt Mellon. He told the officers about his erratic driving, how he hit a car, and then when he stopped the car, Matt basically tuck and rolled out. Jason then said, quote, you got to your destination, sir, and then he took off as fast as he could. And he told the police this. He drove for a few minutes before pulling into the Meadows apartment complex where he saw Tiana. He told officers he pulled out his Glock and began shooting, actually using sound effects as if he were a teenage boy describing a video game. He told them he dumped a whole magazine there and was using sound effects to explain what the gun sounded like as if the police didn't know. He also said, I know I killed her. It was almost as if he was marveling at his own work. He even added that his Glock had jammed during that, and he had to clear the jam to finish shooting. He had no emotion at this point. He also revealed details detectives didn't previously know, like when he approached Mary Lou Nye at the Cracker Barrel, he claimed he asked her if she could spare a dollar to make America great again, and she told him that she didn't have a dollar to spend, so he shot her. He also told officers, I remember that I shot a small person in the head, which was Abby. He felt badly for shooting a child, but didn't express any remorse for shooting anyone else. He told them he wasn't a killer, but he knew that he had killed. During the course of the investigation, detectives kept trying to get Jason to explain why he chose those particular victims, but he said it was all random. They asked him repeatedly in different ways, trying to understand what happened in his life to lead to this. Why had he snapped when he did? What happened? And then, after a long pause, he revealed his reason. He started by saying, quote, if you guys only knew, it would blow your mind. I know that you guys are going to have a hard time believing this, but it literally took over my mind and body. The detective asked, the Uber app? And Jason said, yes. He remembered seeing the symbol of the Eastern Star in the app, like the Masonic Eastern Star, which is the shape of an inverted pentagram. He saw the Eastern Star, and when he tapped it, he said, quote, a devil head popped up. It was some sort of horned head, like a cow head or something. And I pressed that button, and that's where all the problems went after that. The driver app for Uber looked a little different than what the passengers saw, but he told them the Uber app had changed from red to black. It was as if he had gotten an assignment, saying, quote, when it's in that black mode, it literally has control of you. The detectives, of course, were not buying a single thing that came out of his mouth, but they were entertaining the conversation to keep him talking. He told them it would do little blinks at him, which he didn't understand at first, but he went on to explain that one ding meant yes and two meant no, in terms of what it wanted him to do. And in the driver app, when you get a request, there is a ding sound. If you've been in an Uber, you've probably heard this sound. It's when the driver gets a notification of a new ride in the area and they can take it or they can ignore it. This notification will keep dinging for 10 to 12 seconds unless you tap the screen and accept the ride. Jason said he heard sounds coming from his phone when he got pulled over, which was why he didn't shoot police officers. When they pulled over, he almost reached for his gun. But that was when his phone started dinging, so he reached over and tapped it to stay logged in. After that, he said the phone went from being black to being red. When the officers had stopped him, it felt like whatever control he was under had ended. And that was the reason why he didn't shoot them. Once the app went black to red, he was back in his body. He went from being a seemingly normal man with no criminal history to killing 6 people and seriously injuring 2 more in one night. And now he was blaming the Uber app for everything he had done and taking zero accountability. But the officers asked him, "Did the app make you go home, switch out your gun, and put on a bulletproof vest too?" And he said, "Yeah." He told them his memory was spotty, but he does remember shooting people. He'd go in and out. It was such a ridiculous claim, especially because he had seemed completely normal entering this interview, and even throughout, before and after he's explaining this random Uber app mind control that he was under, he was a completely normal guy that had no signs of mental illness or distress. And when Jason's parents found out that he was responsible for the shooting spree, they cried to Lieutenant Chuck Christensen of the Michigan State Police and told him they had just spent Christmas with him and he was totally normal. They didn't know how this could happen. Jason didn't have any marital issues or emotional problems that anyone was aware of, no criminal record, no financial problems. He wasn't an overly political or religious person. There was nothing obvious that stood out. They had no idea what happened to him. And police believed that this story of the Uber app taking over his mind and body was an intentional play by him to get the insanity defense. But investigators still couldn't be sure. They didn't know if he was that smart or if he genuinely believed what he was saying. It was very confusing because he had seemed so rational and calm throughout the rest of the interview, which is basically what blew his whole cover story. And his next step was facing a judge. In that first hearing, it was clear that something seemed off with Jason Dalton. Tiana Carruthers was there after her long road to recovery, and she was afraid. She had to face the man who had shot her 15 times and had changed her life forever. But she knew she had to do it because she was the only person that had talked to him that day and had survived. She knew if she wanted to put him away, she needed to step up and be brave. So with the assistance of someone walking beside her and her cane, she made it onto the stand. As she was giving her testimony, Jason Dalton began speaking over her, saying things that were extremely odd and made no sense. And Tiana completely broke down on the stand, because this whole situation was far too emotional. Multiple officers had to physically drag Jason out of the courtroom. And it did still seem like he was playing this role of the madman, because he was spouting off about black plastic bags and temple and old people. Really, none of what he was saying was making sense. He was just speaking over Tiana as she was attempting to testify. This whole thing was very strange. He had lived a completely normal life for 40 plus years and then broke, it seemed, which was shocking and felt like the act of a madman. But in reality, the prosecution felt as if this mental illness thing he was doing was put on because he had no other defense. If what Jason was claiming were true, it would mean that on one random Saturday at 5 p.m., he was suddenly overwhelmingly mentally ill and unable to control his actions, and then it just turned off at midnight when he surrendered to the police and never happened again. That is just simply not how mental illness works. And even if it was, one of the prosecutors said, quote, "Whether or not it's an act of madness or the act of a sane person is different from the legal standard of what makes you criminally responsible for your actions. The fact that he changed cars, the fact that he changed guns, the fact that he put on a bulletproof vest, that shows that he knew what he was doing. That shows that he knew that his actions were wrong. Which is a really good point, because even if Jason believed what he was saying, which I don't believe he did, but even if it were the case, somewhere in him, he knew what he was doing was wrong, and he was extremely intentional about trying to evade capture and continue causing as much damage as possible. Several defense motions were later filed, which caused the trial to become delayed. The defense wanted none of the police interviews to be used in trial. They were claiming Jason had requested an attorney at the beginning of his interview with police, and he wasn't given one. The court later ruled that only a portion of the first interview could be used in court, and all of the second one was permissible. But another motion was filed by the defense claiming detectives violated Jason's Miranda rights, and the Michigan Court of Appeals decided that neither of these interviews were permissible in court, which was a win for the defense. As the trial approached, the people involved were worried about how this would all play out. But even without the interviews, the prosecution did have the evidence that Jason was wearing a bulletproof vest, had switched cars and firearms, and told his wife that he would be on the news, which all pointed to premeditation. But then, January 7th, 2019, Jason pled guilty to all charges against him. Psychological professionals had examined Jason Dalton and had not found that he met the legal standard of insanity, which meant he wouldn't have been able to use the insanity plea as his defense. And so I guess he realized that he was definitely going to lose and he pled guilty. February 5th of 2019, Jason Dalton was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But when all was said and done, the question of why remained. The Uber app was blamed, but the only person that really knew why it happened was Jason Dalton, and that was extremely frustrating. After finding out about Jason's sentencing, Abby said she would feel better if she had a reason. She doesn't understand why he targeted them. None of them deserved it. During Jason's court appearances, Abby Kopf was still very much fighting for her life in the hospital, and there was no guarantee that she would survive. There were so many ups and downs in her recovery, but then Abby stabilized and started rehab. A few weeks after she had woken up, Abby asked what happened to her. Her mother had to tell her that she had been shot in the head, and the bullet had shattered her skull. She cried, and then a few hours later, she asked her mother again what had happened to her, because she couldn't remember. And they had to go through that multiple times. Her memories from before the shooting were foggy. She asked about Grandma Barb, and when she learned that she didn't make it, Abby almost couldn't handle it. She said if it wasn't for her, she wouldn't be here. Grandma Barb's ashes were scattered off of a hot air balloon in the desert in Arizona, since that was something she always wanted to do. And Abby spent 6 months in the hospital, and it took her 2 months to relearn how to walk and eat again. And after 2 years of treatment and rehab, Abby was eventually able to return to school. Tyler and Rich's family wants them to be remembered as two loving, caring, and compassionate people that were taken way too soon. And Tiana said this incident doesn't define her. She is strong, stronger than she could have ever imagined. After her injuries, she couldn't walk and had to undergo years of rehab and became a motivational speaker. Jason Dalton's victims and the families of the victims were profoundly affected by his rampage that night. And I am very glad that he got life without the possibility of parole because he took so many lives and he is clearly a very dangerous person who shows no sign of being very dangerous until he is. So I'm very glad for Abby and Tiana that they are doing better. And I'm glad for their peace of mind that they never have to worry about Jason Dalton getting out of prison. And thankfully now when you're taking an Uber, you can reach 911 directly through the app. There's also an option to get live help from a safety agent, but that emergency system was only put in place 2 years after the shooting. Thankfully, it is in place now, but that really should have been a part of it the entire time, because if Matt Mellon had been able to call 911 directly from the Uber app, maybe he would have been stopped a lot sooner. So it's definitely good that they have it now. But still, as I said in the beginning, Ubers and Lyfts and ride-sharing apps can be a little bit spooky. Especially when you're traveling by yourself, because you really don't know who you're getting in the car with. Just like all of the people that Jason Dalton drove that night, who had nothing happen to them. They got into the car with this man who had just gone on a murderous rampage, and they were dropped off at their destination completely normally. It made no sense. I mean, none of this makes sense, but yeah, you really don't know what's going on in someone's life, and that is a little bit scary. Also, I would love to know what shifted in him. As everyone would like to know, but It seems like it was just after the phone call he had with his son, who told him that dinner was ready. I mean, I guess we don't know exactly the transcript of this cell phone. Maybe something was said that set him off. But it was from that point on that he did this insane rampage and took so many innocent lives. I totally understand why Abby said that she would feel better if she knew why, but it doesn't look like he's going to tell anyone or that we will ever have that information. I mean, maybe he'll change his mind at some point, but I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't the case, which is a shame. But I don't really have much else to say about that for now, so why don't we move on to a bit of a palate cleanser and I can tell you my good things so we can go on with our days as normal. My good thing is definitely that in a few days, I will be on a girls' trip in Italy with my sisters and mom. My sister has been in Italy for a little while now working, and I'm going to get to go visit her and spend some time there, which is really exciting. I won't be going to the Colosseum, which is something we talked about an episode or so ago, but I will still be getting to eat fantastic food and seeing beautiful sights, and I'm very excited. And yeah, it's a bit of a hectic time as far as planning goes and work, but they're good problems to have. I hope you all are having a good summer so far, getting outside and maybe traveling, because tis the season. Thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to check out all of our bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. For even more bonus content, head over to my YouTube channel, Steph Today, over on YouTube. If you or anyone knows a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you would like to share with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listener's episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. I post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the T on that podcast is a 3 because that makes sense. And just keep breathing. Yeah.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.